With COVID-19 vaccines on the rise and the United States approaching almost 50% of the population being fully vaccinated, it's important to stay up to date and understand the differences between the vaccination options. We're going to talk about it today with Dr. Caroline Goldzweig, the Chief Medical Officer of the Cedars-Sinai Medical Network. This is a Cedars-Sinai COVID-19 update from Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. My name is Prakash Chandran. So Dr. Goldzweig, it's great to have you here today. I know a lot of people understand this already, but let's just talk at a high level about some of the differences between the vaccines that are available, specifically Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson.
Hey there, Prakash. So the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines use a different technology than the Johnson & Johnson or Janssen vaccine. All of the vaccines that we have right now are extremely effective in preventing severe COVID illness, but the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines use what's called a messenger RNA technology, whereas the Johnson & Johnson use a viral vector technology. I guess we could go into more details on that if you're interested.
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about the differences between the mRNA technology versus the viral vector that you just mentioned.
Okay, sure. So the mRNA technology, essentially what happens is we've figured out very quickly over the last year and a half the genetic makeup of the SARS-CoV-2, the coronavirus. And we also figured out what part of it is what penetrates our cells and starts to cause all the problems, and that's the spike protein that sits on top. It's what you see poking out of the coronavirus and all those pictures that we always see. And so the messenger RNA technology essentially has mimicked the genetic code of that spike protein, and it programs your body to create fighter cells against that spike protein. And it does that through this messenger that goes into your cell and tells the cell what to do. Now, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine uses a very traditional way of developing immunity. It's the same kind of way that we use for flu vaccines and others, where we take a part of another virus, an adenovirus, which causes the common cold, and we use that as kind of the vehicle or the chassis upon which the COVID vaccine, again, the spike protein, is embedded. And then when that goes into the cell, again, it triggers an immune response to that vaccine, and you get the same kind of antibodies created to fight off the spike protein.
Okay, that's helpful to know. So because these two types of vaccines use different technologies, are they both equally as effective?
Well, the data right now shows that the Pfizer-Moderna vaccines, which use the mRNA technology, they were 95% effective in preventing symptomatic COVID illness in the original studies. And then in the real world, we've seen almost as good of an impact of those. And then for J&J, we've seen that it's 85% effective. That was in the original studies as well. And its real-world effectiveness seems to be really high as well against severe COVID, so between 85 and 90%. So all of them actually are really great choices, and they just have different other characteristics that would make a person maybe prefer one over the other.
And one of the questions I wanted to get some clarity on is, when you are fully vaccinated, are you completely immune from contracting COVID-19, or is this just something that protects you from experiencing the worst symptoms when you contract it?
So the vaccines for sure are effective in preventing serious COVID illness. So what we've seen in the real world is that, for instance, in healthcare environments, when a lot of the healthcare workers get vaccinated, they don't need to be hospitalized. And that's really the for sure benefit of getting vaccinated, is that we are seeing fewer deaths from COVID. We are seeing people not needing to be hospitalized. You still can get COVID if you've been vaccinated. What we think is that your ability to transmit it to someone else may be diminished. And that may be because if you contract COVID, your body is primed to fight it, and it does that in a pretty quick way. so that it minimizes the amount of time that you may actually be infectious to others. And so we are seeing greatly decreased transmission of COVID when we have more and more people vaccinated. But there are breakthroughs. I mean, people have been vaccinated. They do get COVID. They just don't get as sick. And that's really what we're trying to prevent, because we don't want people to have to be hospitalized. We want to overwhelm our hospitals. We don't want people to die from COVID. And we also want to minimize the disease so that people don't get these long-time, long-hauler type syndromes, these sequelae of COVID that can actually be very debilitating. So that's pretty much the answer. You can still get COVID, but if you do, your likelihood of transmitting it is lower and your likelihood of getting sick is far, far lower.
Okay, I see. And I want to just focus a little bit more on the J&J vaccine specifically. I think we all know, or the public has heard, that it was paused by the FDA and CDC, and now it's resumed distribution. Can you talk a little bit about what exactly happened?
Yes, absolutely. So there were some reports of some unusual blood clotting occurring in patients shortly after having received the J&J vaccine. And so out of an abundance of caution, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the CDC decided to pause vaccination with the J&J vaccine so that they could do some more investigation and understand whether, in fact, these clotting episodes were related to the vaccine and how significant a problem they were. And so during that time of pause, I think they identified something like out of the millions of doses that have been given, maybe 15 cases of patients who developed some unusual clots. And actually, the syndrome that they identified was that patients have a propensity to clotting, but they also have low platelet counts. And so it's a bit of an unusual clotting problem, again, very rare. So I think 210 million doses had been administered at the time. And as I said, about 15 cases have been reported. It seemed to be occurring women under 50, most likely. And so because it was such a very rare potential complication, and because with COVID illness, in fact, the risk of clotting is much higher, it was felt that the benefits of the vaccine, of the J&J vaccine, far outweighed this small risk. What the CDC and the FDA did as well is that they put out lots and lots of information to physicians and healthcare organizations across the country to make sure that people would be on the lookout if a patient, for instance, got a vaccine and came in with a severe headache. So they were able to resume the J&J vaccine because there's a lot of benefits to it. The number one benefit being that it's one and done. As people say, you only need one J&J vaccine, whereas you need a booster for the Moderna and the Pfizer.
Right. And just also focusing a little bit more on that risk, you're saying 15 cases out of 210 million. And from what I've heard, you have a greater chance of being struck by lightning or getting in a car accident on the way to getting the vaccine. Isn't that correct?
Yes, really the incidence of this is very low, and you're exactly right. So it all has to be put into perspective. I think that's one of the conversations I have a lot with patients who have some hesitancy about vaccine, is to try to put in perspective what are the risks of vaccine, but then what are the risks of getting COVID? Because we're seeing more and more people with long-term problems from COVID, even if they had a mild COVID illness.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to address, though, is that there are still going to be people that are apprehensive about getting the J&J vaccine because it was put on hold. And I know that some people are saying, well, why would you even consider it when the Moderna and the Pfizer are out there and they're so effective? So what might you say to people that are thinking that?
Well, the first thing I would say is that, yes, the Moderna and Pfizer seem to be really effective, but I think the J&J is also really effective, and we have to remember that they were tested. Their effectiveness as measured was from studies that were done at very different times where there may have been different variants circulating, and so it's really hard to compare their effectiveness head-on, one-to-one. So I think it's really about whether you want to be able to get a vaccine and just get one shot and then know that you are protected. And I think that the J&J does allow for that. I think that in terms of side effects from the vaccines, they're very similar. With the Pfizer Moderna, the second time around, some people have more significant side effects from the vaccine. But again, none of this lasts for a very long time. So when you talk about even side effects from these vaccines, it's usually a day or two when people may have some symptoms.
So I want to move on now to who can get the vaccine. I've heard that now children 12 and up can get it. Can you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah. So the Pfizer vaccine is the only one right now where children under 18 can receive it. So Pfizer has gotten FDA approval from age 12 and up. Moderna is in the process of trying to get approval for more of the pediatric population, but that is the one available now for adolescents. So very exciting because it really, I think, will make a huge difference in the lives of children, just as it has in the lives of adults. And the other two vaccines, I will just say, Prakash, are for 18 and older.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. One of the other things I wanted to talk to you about related to this is that there's going to be a set of parents out there that have heard that because a younger demographic typically is not as susceptible to some of the more severe symptoms of COVID-19, they're wondering, well, why should my child get vaccinated? You know, like they seem to be protected. They've been protected through this pandemic. Is it really worth putting them through this and the side effects of getting the vaccine? What might you say to people that are thinking that?
Well, I think we know that COVID will be around as long as there's a reservoir for it. And children will be a reservoir for COVID. And so even though younger kids didn't seem early on to be as impacted, to be as sick when they got COVID, many of them can still get very sick. And they obviously, if they're unvaccinated, are more likely to transmit it and to keep it circulating in our communities. So again, on our way to herd immunity for the United States and for the world, we're going to need children and adults to be vaccinated. So given how safe these vaccines appear to be and given how effective they appear to be, it really is advisable for children to get vaccinated as well. And I know our pediatricians are seeing, you know, more COVID in the kids now. That's the reservoir. It finds whoever is still susceptible.
Yeah, you know, I think you make a really important point there that a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, these viruses need hosts or carriers, right? And so even if it's not necessarily affecting the child, that child can spread it to someone who is more at risk. And so the sooner we can really eliminate the ability for the virus to take hold of people and to spread, the better we will be as a society. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Absolutely. That's exactly the reason.
So one of the last things I wanted to ask you about is after someone is fully vaccinated, are they able to resume completely normal activities in their normal way of life?
So fully vaccinated means that you are 2 weeks out from the last vaccine, if it's the Pfizer Moderna, from the second vaccine, or 2 weeks out from your J&J. And in the state of California right now, if you are considered fully vaccinated, your life is way better. You now can go out without a mask, go into restaurants without a mask. There are just a few situations where people still need to be masked. Those include public transportation and airports, and it's recommended in very congested places. And then in healthcare settings, where like where I work, we are still masking 100% of the time. So requiring anyone who comes into our environments to be masked, and that's because we have such vulnerable people and people who may be immune compromised, who may not be vaccinated or may have been vaccinated but didn't get the response that you would like because their immune system isn't as strong. So being vaccinated, fully vaccinated, it gives you a lot of freedoms and I think helps you to get back to what starts to feel like the so-called normal.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. I know that I have certainly felt like that after being fully vaccinated. And it's so nice to really just feel like things are slowly starting to open up again. I'm able to go and eat at my favorite restaurants and it just feels so great.
It really does.
So Dr. Goldsweig, just before we sign off today, is there anything else that you wanted to share with everyone about these vaccines?
Just I think that having these vaccines is really, to me, an amazing feat of science and shows how well we're able to respond. And I think, again, what I'd like to remind people of is that COVID itself, the illness, is very serious. And as I said, we are seeing long-term problems in patients who had very mild COVID illness, you know, who didn't even need to be hospitalized. And so we want to prevent that kind of thing from changing people's lives for years to come. And the vaccine is the surest way to do that.
Okay. Well, Dr. Goldsweig, I think that is the perfect place to end. Thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely, Prakash.
That's Dr. Caroline Goldsweig, Chief Medical Officer of the Cedars-Sinai Medical Network. You can get the latest COVID-19 information from the COVID-19 update emails and on the Cedars-Sinai intranet. Thank you so much again for listening. My name is Prakash Chandran, and we'll talk next time.